Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Monday, July 24th, 2000. In the fireside room this afternoon, we have Tom Fuchs. Today's session number is HFT-2001. Today, Tom is beginning his series called Conflict Resolution, Communication, and Management. Today's title is The Universal Experience of Conflict. Let's listen in.
My name is Tom Fuchs, and I am... I work at the University of North Dakota in the Conflict Resolution Center. The Conflict Resolution Center at the University of North Dakota has been around for 11 years. And I want to tell you a little bit about our center because it'll say more about what I'm going to do in this experience from the beginning. Let's see. We've been around for 11 years. We have a direct report to the president of the university. In other words, we are not part of any department within the university. We stand alone because of conflict is such a touchy issue. In all environments, conflict's a touchy issue, but certainly in university settings, it gets to be pretty hot sometimes. So we're independent. We do really three things. Mediation. Mediation is when you sit down and have two parties in front of you and you act as a mediator to help them solve that problem. We also do large group facilitation where we'll take groups as large as this or larger in organizations that are experiencing a lot of conflict and help them work through it. So that's the second element that we do. The third element we do is training. About 90% of what we do is go into organizations, business, nonprofits, churches, schools, you name it, we do it. We go in there and we teach organizations all about how to reestablish an understanding for how to handle conflict. It's an exciting theory. It's a brand new theory. It was developed in 1994 by Baruch Bush and Joe Folger. And they wrote a book called The Promise of Mediation. The theory we're going to talk about, we've expanded to include standard conflict resolution, but some of the elements come from that theory, and so I want to acknowledge that right away. I am from northern Minnesota, so I work at the University of North Dakota, but I live in northern Minnesota, a small town called Crookston. I'm married, I have two kids, and I was a staff coordinator with my wife here in 1989 to 1991. So I think it was really the culmination of an understanding that I wanted to be in conflict resolution because anytime there was a hard conversation, somehow I was on that end of it. My wife would be the one that wrote the letters and gave people all the warm fuzzies. But if a staff person needed some talking to, it was me. But that was kind of a strange place to be in because I had to take a lot of hard walks down the road with people and say, you know, are you really happy here? Do you really like what you're doing? And so that movement. Oftentimes when somebody starts talking, at least if I'm sitting in your spot, the first thing I think is like, who is this guy? You know, does he know anything? What's his background? Here's the quick down and dirty. From central Minnesota, Painesville, near St. Cloud, I come from a family of seven kids. I'm a middle child. That automatically makes me a peacemaker. It does. If you come from seven children, and if you're a middle child, almost guaranteed you're going to be a peacemaker. And there were three boys, and I was the last boy, and then there were three girls. So I was even more of a peacemaker in that setting, and then there was another boy. So I went to school at Morehead State University. I managed to cram 4 years of college into 9.5 years. I pushed really hard. I thought I could do it. I thought I could go 10, but I met my wife and decided I wanted to get married, so I finished up in 9.5. I worked at Hamline University in St. Paul. I worked in college housing. You know, that is rot with conflict. So I kept sort of like, every time I look around, I'm dealing with conflict. And a lot of the theories that were out didn't make any sense. The theories that were out about conflict at the time and still are out there, and they're almost part of our cultural norm. It's like, deal with the person. No, deal with the problem, not the person. Don't get emotional. And I've been to these events, and they sound really good when you're sitting there and you don't have any conflict and you have nothing to base it on. And they all go, and you go like, yeah, I can use those skills. Those are going to be great skills. And then the next time you're in conflict, you can't even find your belly button with both hands. I mean, it's that confusing, isn't it? So we're going to talk about that experience. So, Hamline University moved to Holden Village, 1989 to 1991. Then we had a couple job offers, one in Portland, one at Lutheran Bible Institute. Everything in our head said, go to Portland. You know, we had great jobs, different universities. We accepted those jobs. We struggled, we accepted the jobs. An hour later, we called those jobs up and we said we can't go there. And we were led to Lutheran Bible Institute. So I worked there for 5 years. I was in charge of college housing again. This time in a very much of a Christian setting, kind of a new person faith-wise and, you know, just trying to figure it all out. And I did a master's degree at a Jesuit university, Seattle University. So I'm sort of have all those ties. My master's degree is in adult education and training. In other words, hopefully I've gone to school long enough to know a little bit about what adults want. A couple things I know adult wants. Quick adult theory in terms of learning. One, everything I say today, you will not take and incorporate into your life. Guaranteed. That's good. That's good. Two, you all come with your experiences. There isn't one person in here who doesn't feel like something I'm using works well for me in terms of my conflict. Okay? So you come fully loaded with your experiences. The third is that adaptive value. You have to take ideas and try them on and utilize them. And really, what I'm going to be doing through this next 2 weeks is life-changing. Even this first 50 minutes, it can be life-changing if you start to look at conflict differently. A paradigm we use at the center is that there are three different levels that you can change. And one of the things you'll learn real quickly is that I am a shitty speller. I mean, to put it honestly, yeah, I'm very bad at it. So I hope you don't mind. I think of it as creative spelling after a while. But you can change behavior three different ways. One is by actually changing the behavior. That's where you go up to your kids and say, don't do that, you know, and you try and think that it's going to be a successful way. Another way to change behavior is through beliefs. Okay, or thoughts. That's the area we're going to work on today. Beliefs and thoughts. The other way you can do it is on feelings. And feelings are just that. They are feelings. And the ability to change feelings is almost impossible. Because it's like somebody's crying, and I'm a parent, and I fall into those traps too. Sometimes I just want to say, don't cry. Knowing that it's not successful. So, feelings, behavior, beliefs, and thoughts. What we're going to do is we're going to try to talk about conflict in a whole different way today, because I can tell you behavior. I can say, don't get emotional. Well, that is both the feeling and the behavior, isn't it? It's not successful and it doesn't work. What we're going to try and get you to do is to think differently about the way you think about conflict. I never finished my story, did I? So I'm at Lutheran Bible Institute, 5 years living on campus, did a master's at Seattle University. And after you live in Washington long enough, you begin to idealize what the Midwest winter is really like. Yeah, you begin to think, it really wasn't that cold. There really weren't that many mosquitoes. You know, all those things sort of start to play in your head. And we thought, yeah, we'll go back to Minnesota. And so my wife found a job at the University of Minnesota Crookston. And I led my kids and my children, and we packed everything up and moved back to Minnesota. And my girls thought that snow was like Holden, you know? Snow just falling silently. The first blizzard, November 17th, I'm dragging them through the snowdrift, and my older daughter, she's like 8 years old, she's like, and I'm just pulling her through these snowdrifts. And you know, how many of you are from Minnesota or the Midwest? Raise your hand. Okay, well, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? Pulling them through, I get her in the car and I'm brushing off her clothes. I'm like, she still continues to whimper. I'm like, what's wrong? She said, how can people live in this stuff? Conflict, right there. That's conflict. Because her idealized identity of what this was about and her reality were absolutely colliding. Okay. Today we're going to talk about conflict. I'm actually going to spend some time where I'm going to split you into groups. And you don't know each other right now, or for the most part don't each know each other. So I just want you to take a minute, because you're going to be probably working in your groups right around you. Just stand up and introduce yourself just right around you so that you know each other. Do that right now. Everybody stand up. I know. Stand up. Sorry about that, Mr. Tape Man.
It's probably a woman.
No, it is a man. I met him. Nikolai. All right. Today we're going to talk about conflict. And as I sort of mentioned earlier, we're going to talk about the way conflict really works. And to do this, I want to take you back to a place that you probably isn't a very easy place to go, but I'm going to have you shut your eyes, and I recognize that at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that is really a risk with adults to ask you to close your eyes. But I'm asking you to close your eyes, and you're going to spend about 2 minutes, and that's a long time to keep your eyes closed in a group, so be ready for that. 2 minutes to think about a recent conflict you were in. And this can be a pretty significant conflict. Should be with another person, probably the easiest way to think about it. And I don't want you to think about the resolution of that conflict. I want you to think about it at the very moment when it was happening. Okay? And I want you to think about the feelings and the thoughts that are going through your head at that time. And you can just shut your eyes and do that, and we'll come back in 2 minutes. All right, when you're ready to open your eyes, you can come back into the room. I want some people to just tell me, what are the words or feelings that you feel like when you're right in the middle of that conflict? Go ahead.
Disbelief.
Disbelief. Right. That's right. Disbelief. I don't even know if I'm spelling correctly already here. Disbelief. Right. We have a disbelief. I think it's I before E, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ah, don't you hate when that happens? Right in the first one.
Yeah.
You might want to have a write
a recorder.
A scribe. Would you like to be it? What's your name?
Lois.
Let's give Lois a big hand. You always pick on the people who open their mouth. That's rule number one, working with adults. That's right. Thank you, Lois.
Are there any markers?
Yeah, they're kind of crazy markers. Disbelief. Right, so there's a disbelief. What's another word we have?
Frustration.
What?
Frustration.
Frustration, right. It's a frustration. She's very good, isn't she?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's some anger there, and there's a real powerlessness. It's like you don't feel like you got the power or you're in control, right? Another word.
Hurt.
Hurt.
Craziness. One of us has to be crazy.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it's not me.
And it's not me.
Resentment and whether or not to use one's power to attack.
Uh-huh. Right, there's resentment, and then you don't quite know whether or not you should attack or how you should handle it. So, kind of confusion, but also some resentment. Good. What another one? What's another one?
Distrust.
Distrust. Right, we don't trust the other person. In the yellow, did you raise your hand? Okay. Okay.
This was with somebody I didn't know as well. I didn't know at all.
Sure.
And I had these, I don't know how to describe it, terrible butterflies in my stomach.
Yeah.
Just my
fear.
You know,
nauseous.
Fight or flight thing.
Uh-huh. Physical response, fight or flight. And we'll talk about fight or flight in a little while. But yes, we have that. It's just like this acid thing that happens immediately. Okay?
Tensors in the neck and shoulders.
Right. You're tense. Yeah, you're tense in your neck and shoulders. Someone else said something here.
Strategy.
Strategy. Say more about that.
It's a funny thing, because oftentimes if you feel like you're going to be involved in a conflict, you come forward with a strategy of how you would be able to bring forth your point.
Uh-huh. So you're strategizing about how to get your point through to the people.
And to
make them
win.
Win. Win is good. Yeah. Yeah.
With win-lose. Pops into my head.
Right, right. Sometimes it's win-lose, isn't it? Yeah. We'll talk a little bit. There's kind of a mythology about win-win, and we'll talk a little bit more about it as we go along. Yes.
Instant justification of, like, your side of the story.
Justification is a good word. Yeah,
justification. Are you Nikolai?
Uh-huh.
What the heck are you doing in this session, man? You're supposed to be listening to me.
I'm listening.
Oh, good. Good, thanks. I thought I was yelling at you. Good, Nikolai.
Another thing is, like, why am I wasting my time? You're never going to hear me.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Kind of a... yeah, I would never say exasperation because I couldn't spell it, but yes.
Yeah. I was just checking how you doing? How to spell that.
Yeah. Along with that, it's like, is this worth the energy? If I'm feeling this response, okay, I can see that with disbelief, I'm coming from such a different place. So is it really worth the energy to try to say, you know, gee, when you said or did this, I got this response, I think it's hooking this in me. What do you think's going on for you? Is it going to make any difference?
Do I care?
Do I care, maybe? Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of the do I care. Or... can I care in some ways? It's almost, can I, is it worth it? Is it worth it to care? Sure. What else?
Self-blame.
Yeah. Yeah, we can't quite figure out, is this our fault? Did I do something? Right? Is that a common thing? Sure.
And so the flip side of that, feeling unjustly accused.
Oh, yeah.
Seen as a bad guy.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
When we know, of course. That
we aren't. No, no way. Good. Anything else? I forgot the top row up here. Anything up here?
Defensiveness.
Defensiveness. Yeah. Defensiveness.
Would that be split rail defensiveness or picketness?
Put an idea forth. Put the idea forth and then walk away. Quite often the person will come back and will think it was their idea.
Uh-huh. But do you feel like walking away?
My husband is there.
That's why you're on opposite sides of the room, right? No, so sometimes you just feel like walking away, giving the idea and just walking away.
Yeah.
Another thing that's pretty common experience, at least it is for me, is I want the earth to open up and for them to either swallow me or them. And I don't care at that point. Yeah. Do you ever get that feeling? It's like, I just want to get out of the situation. I so much want to be out of the situation. Yeah. Okay, that's fine. Any other thoughts? Kind of right in the middle of that experience, we have a lot. Disbelief, frustration, anger, powerlessness, hurt, craziness, resentment, use of power, attack, distrust, butterflies, tension, a strategy, how do I get my point across, win, lose, justification, exasperation, is it worth the energy, do I care, is it worth it to care, self-blame, unjustly accused, defensiveness, and getting out of a situation, how do you get out of a situation? Other things? Kind of cover.
Oh, vulnerability, you know, things like, geez, am I going to lose my job?
Mm-hmm. You feel very vulnerable. Sure.
Will this relationship blow up?
Mm-hmm.
Or to carry that one step further, will this happen again soon?
Yes.
Yeah. Is this some kind of pattern?
Right.
Yeah, and adults, humans, all humans, understand most human interaction in patterns. We'll talk more about that, but yeah, it's very important. Yeah, will this happen again? Another thing I want you to think about, we're going to move kind of out of that realm, and we're going to move into the realm of, so what words would you use to describe the other person that you were in the conflict with?
Crazy.
Stubborn.
Crazy, stubborn. Okay.
Well, from whose perspective?
From your own. I am only talking about your perspective.
Manipulative.
Yes.
Condescending.
Oh, slow down. Lois is just getting overwhelmed here. You doing okay, Lois?
Yeah, I'm okay.
She's doing very well.
Unreasonable.
Unreasonable. Misinformed.
Self-centered.
Hang on here. She's starting to only write half of the word.
Her favorite ones. Unreasonable.
Unreasonable and
that's
misunderstood.
That's what it is. It's a U.
Right, so we think that they're stubborn and crazy, manipulative, condescending, unreasonable, misinformed, self...
We're not having any trouble coming up with any of these at all.
Nope. Keep going. Self-centered. What else?
Unjust.
Unjust. Right. You guys are missing all the good ones. Come on.
What?
What?
Moron.
Stupid. Moron.
scumbag.
Scumbag! Where did that come from? Right, scumbag.
Hostile.
How about just human?
Yep. Well, just human. That, at the moment of the crime, at the moment of the conflict, we may not just
human.
Think.
They are not human.
Subhuman. But you're right. You're right. There may be a point that you can move into that. They're only human, and we'll talk about that movement in conflict. I'm just talking about right in that very caught, trapped feeling. You think,
what a jerk!
Right?
Sometimes they can be cruel too.
Cruel. Mm-hmm.
And fear-based.
Yeah. Right.
What is
right.
that?
Fear-based. Right. So they're operating on kind of fear, or they're making you be fearful.
Or they're fearful, so they're trying to change you. Threatening.
Right. Threatening.
I don't know. I think they're not listening.
Right. They're not listening.
But how does that make you feel?
Like they should be listening to me.
Exactly. Go ahead. And then you.
Totally off base, unreal, not connected to reality, you know.
Irrational.
Thank you.
Yes, irrational.
Menacing.
Okay.
These seem to fit if we're talking about conflict with, say, another adult. But I deal with kids, and sometimes I'm in a conflict that I don't want to be in, and I can say that they feel powerless, they feel devastated, they feel just like I do almost anything for them not to feel that way.
Here's a story for you. I have a daughter, Michaela. You've probably met her. She is the most outgoing 8-year-old girl in the village now. You can be guaranteed of this. Blonde, always up in your face. Actually, you folks have met her. Yeah, you know her. Yeah, she's just like, she'll talk with anybody about anything, you know? She talks continuously. I put her to bed, and I have that routine, you know, the routine you do before you put, when you put your children to bed, you do the book, you do the wash, you do the brush, you do the prayer, you do the goodnight kiss, you do the one last glass of water, you know, that whole story. I get her in bed, and I need to go to bed early, and so I get up, or I'm in there brushing my teeth, all of a sudden she's up beside me. I'm like, Michaela, I said, get to bed. Okay, you know, we've gone through the routine. You need to be in bed now. Trying to be the good parent, you know. I get her back down. I lay her down. And they're brushing my teeth. Blip. Again, she's talking to me. I'm like, Michaela, you know how that goes. You know, you raise your voice. It's like, Auntie up. Michaela. Raise it one voice. I said, get back to bed. I've told you before. I lead her in there. Third time.
You're going to use her middle name.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I could be one of the counting parents. What? One and a half? I'm not. Finally, I said, Michaela, get your butt to bed. I'm tired of this, you know? I was kind of at my end, you know? She lays down in bed. She goes, poopy butt. Poopy butt is the 7-year-old equivalent of self-centered, unjust, moron, stupid scumbag. Yes, it is. Poopy butt.
This is a matter of vocabulary.
That's right. It's a matter of vocabulary.
So you were poopy butt. In my case, this other person is a shithead.
Yes, exactly. That is it exactly. Here's what we find out, and I want to pass out this first. Here, Lois. We're going to put it down. You can put it down. I have developed. Oh, excuse me. I'm going to give you the single one. I have developed this list with kids. I have developed this list with executives. I've developed this list with teachers. I've developed this kids with the minors this morning over in the VC. I've developed this list with I've developed this list with retirees. I've developed this list with school kids as young as 4 and 5, 6, 7 years old. I've developed this list, and our organization, the Conflict Resolution Center at UND, has developed this list over and over and over again. and the list is the same. The list is absolutely the same, no matter this group does it this morning in the VC or a year ago when I was working with executives from the United States Postal Service. It's the same. Those are the same words. These are the same words. And look at this under where it says empowerment and its opposites. And it says at the top of the page, parties in conflict feel unsettled, confused, fearful, disorganized. Look at all these words. Disbelief, frustration, anger, powerlessness, hurt, crazy, resentment, distrust, butterflies in stomach. Is this worth the energy? Do I care? Okay, we're fearful, we're disorganized, we're unsure of what to do. It never changes. And I think if we are going to begin to look at conflict differently in the world, we're going to have to begin to understand that there is a universal experience for conflict that every single person experiences. So the next time you have a conflict with another person, you know that they are going to experience the same thing. And in fact, if we put all the people in the room that you were having a conflict with for the 2 minutes you were reliving your conflict, maybe they already are in the room. They sat them down here. And if we asked them the same questions, they would say, I felt this way. And this is how they would describe all of you. Stubborn, crazy, manipulative, condescending, moron, stupid, scumbags. Now that is a weird thing to think about. And it's really pretty simple. And it's like, it shouldn't be that much of a surprise. But in some ways, it's really earth-shaking. Because I'm a mediator. And I mediate for a lot of crazy organizations like the United States Postal Service and the Environmental Protection Agency. And I do divorce and family mediation. I do all sorts of things. And for such a long time, mediators started looking at who's right and who's wrong, who's powerful and who's powerless. And we've had to stop doing that because nobody in conflict feels powerful. And I work with landlord-tenant, you know, and the landlord, and we used to always think the landlord was the strong person. This was after post-flood in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and we thought the landlords were coming in there and they were strong and powerful. Well, the landlords came in feeling the same things, like they couldn't have any sort of reasonable conversation with the tenants. And the tenants came in feeling the same thing, and we started to say, wait a minute. There's a common experience here that we are missing. And as people of faith, we need to recognize it. I look at the world today and the world of computers and what I like to term pseudo-community, where we think we're becoming better and better connected. And in many ways, we're becoming less and less connected because we're not doing these kind of experiences, this kind of experience where we're talking to each other. And you have to think about what is the connection and why do we continue to have road rage? And think about road rage in this context. You know, that's a very powerful act. In the last month, I've seen 3 acts of road rage, and it looks to be a very powerful act. In reality, it's a very much out of frustration, angerless, powerlessness. All of these things are coming to head. So look down in the next step where it says recognition and its opposites. Parties in conflict are self-protective, they're defensive, they're suspicious, we're unable to look beyond our own needs, and we're self-absorbed. Doesn't matter whether or not it doesn't matter whether or not we're in conflict with each other. And most conflict resolution theory has been about, what is your name?
Bill.
Bill. It was about Bill and I having a fight and then us trying to reconcile it. Us trying to reconcile it. We can get these same thoughts and beliefs, these same feelings when we're in another situation. A while ago I was, before I do that I want to do this next thing. So we believe that there's a fundamental experience of conflict. A fundamental experience of conflict that absolutely every time you get into a conflict, you experience. Doesn't matter whether you're 3 or 30 or 90 or whatever your age is, that experience doesn't fundamentally change. So we believe there's a fundamental experience of conflict. When we're at peace with ourselves and others and our environment, we really feel relatively strong. We feel like we control the world. You know, it's like, I got it down. Life is good, you know? And for the most part, we spend about 90% of our time, 95% of our time, probably 99% of our time in control of our lives. Don't we? And for the most part, our conflict is really pretty much self-chosen today. Whether we want to struggle with an issue because, for the most part, we're fair, we're an affluent society. You know, we don't need to worry about where the next meal comes from or whether or not we are going to be taken advantage of. You know, we pretty much are secure. And so our conflict even becomes more distorted because we don't have those everyday kind of, that really approximately 90% of the world has. We don't have it. So When we're at peace with ourselves and others and our environment, we're confident of interpretations of our surroundings. We're capable of managing our world. We're in touch with our resources we can use. And we're in control of our lives. And every one of us that sits in this room are very, very good conflict resolvers. And I think, it's a strange thing to work in conflict resolution. Because the minute I say, well, I work in conflict resolution and I'm a mediator, the first thing inevitably that people almost 90% of the time say, I'm really bad at that. Well, you know, and I think it's a myth. I think that we actually are pretty good at it. I think with some more skills we can even be better at it. But I think for the most part, you know, the people who aren't bad at it are marginalized to the edges of our society. They're the people living underneath the bridge, folks. They're the people who are homeless. They're the people who are really struggling. We really are doing a pretty good job of it. I think we can do a better job of it, but I think we are doing a very good job of it. Look under the second half. When we're in conflict with ourselves or others, we feel relatively weak. We're unsure of the interpretations of our surroundings. We're incapable of managing our role of the moment. We're unaware of the resources we can use, and we're not in control of our lives. An example, I do most of the cooking in my family. My wife doesn't cook. That's pretty easy, isn't it? I make spaghetti one night. She says, we're going to have company, we're going to have spaghetti. I'm like, that sounds good, I'll be home 5 o'clock. She said, I'll be home at 5 o'clock too. So I got home about, you know, 4:45. I'm starting to put spaghetti on and do the hamburger and do the whole bit and the onions. And I start making the spaghetti noodles. And spaghetti is one of those things that has always escaped me. There is no relationship to how much spaghetti you make to how much spaghetti you have left over. Have you ever noticed that? And those dang things with the holes you push through don't work for me. I don't know about you. Don't work for me. So I'm like making my spaghetti like I'm supposed to. I'm a little bit frustrated, Pam. It's a little after 5. Pam's not home. So I put the spaghetti on and it's boiling. I'm doing all the other stuff. And all of a sudden, I look at the spaghetti noodles and I know in my heart of hearts, it is not enough spaghetti. That's conflict. Something's wrong and I'm going to have to fix it. So I'm looking around. I'm making the spaghetti. I got to pour the water off and boil more spaghetti using the same water. I think it can save me time. You know, I got to get it out. So I'm still feeling okay, but I'm getting a little bit more harried. And I find is it a colander? Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
Colander. And it's about this big. And so I have to find something very large to pour the water in, otherwise it'll splash all over the place. So I look around the kitchen and I'm getting more and more nervous. And I see my wife's glass punch bowl right there. Yeah, you know where I'm going. But I'm not stupid. I went to science in 9th grade. I remember the expansion of glass, so I poured slowly. You know. Yeah. Follow me so far? I pour a little bit, and the fog is rolling up, the steam is rolling up on it. And it's okay, you know. And I pour a little more, and it's okay. Pour the third time, like, it must be just fine. And so I went,
Doubt.
And I'm like, shit. You can quote me on that. That's exactly that is the one word that I used right at that very moment. And I'm just like, you know, now I'm in conflict. I'm in complete conflict. Okay, look at this, where it says, when we are in conflict with ourselves or others or our environment, we're unsure of our interpretations of our surroundings, incapable of managing our world. We're unsure of the resources we can use, and we're not in control of our lives. I freaked out. Okay, so now I have to boil more water. So I run to the stove,
and
I got glass all over the place, and a mess. And my wife had just been home, like a couple minutes earlier, had gone through the thing. It's like, hi, honey. I'm like, you know. So I'm like, I run to the sink and I run water. But rather than running hot water, I run cold water. And I set it on the burner. I turn it on high, and I dump 8 more ounces of spaghetti into the cold water. Now, am I any stupider at that moment than I am the 900 other times that I've made spaghetti? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It is the experience of conflict that makes smart people feel really dumb. Really dumb. Okay? That will never, ever change. Okay? As much as I would like to say, my gosh, I am... You know, I know all about this now, and I can change it. The minute I get into conflict, it's going to happen. Another experience, Dallas. I'm working for the United States Postal Service. And the Postal Service is about one of the most rigid. It used to be a military organization. There's a Postmaster General. They have tours of duty. They have acronyms, so many acronyms in their organization. They have a book on acronyms. I mean, it is very regimented, and that's one of the reasons why they've had so much trouble in their organization. So I said, I need to make some phone calls. It was on a break. They said, well, you can't make phone calls from this area. You know, they're paying me like $2,000 a day to do training, and they're not going to pay me, you know, or let me make phone calls there. I'm just like, what? You know? So they said, go downstairs in the lobby. I'm like, what? In the lobby? You know, and so I'm kind of frustrated. You know, it's like, this is stupid. You know, I'm a non-military guy to begin with, and then this sort of like just pushed me right over the edge. I go downstairs, I start making the phone calls, and I work for the state of North Dakota, University of State Organization, and I have like 20 different digits to punch in to get my messages. Now, I don't use this very often, and so I'm listening to it, and there's like 2 messages I really, really need. The fourth one was the message, one of the messages I really, really need. And, you know, answer machines are, it's like, you know, this is John, you can call me back. And I'm like, I couldn't get the phone number down. And so I punched the button, and rather than going backwards, I erased it. And I'm just like, ooh, you know, and I went on, you know, I had to go on, and I was writing all my messages on a notepad, and I got through the day, you know, and I know a lot about conflict resolution, and I got through the end of the day, and I looked, or the end of the messages, and I looked at my message, and it was like, well, you've seen how clear and concise my writing is to begin with, but clear and concise for me, completely unreadable. That message was. The next couple messages, I had no kind of experience or understanding about even what it said. I mean, it was just scribbled. It was 2 or 3 lines big. Okay, and slowly, that worked out. So we as adults, as humans, as children, and everywhere we've been, we have this experience. This experience is absolutely universal. Questions? Comments? Does it make sense?
Makes sense.
Makes sense. And you know what's really strange about it is that we have not had any language to talk about this. What do you say to somebody when you've had a fight with them?
Poopy butt.
Poopy butt.
I'm sorry.
That's right. You may get there.
Oh, but I might say, I'm sorry, I don't want to talk right now. I'm still too agitated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wonderful.
She's been working on this for years.
She's been working on it for years. Here's a great example. I was taking my daughter, same daughter. If you see her, don't mention that I said this. She doesn't like me to tell this one. She comes out of that I ran in one day and I had to run an errand. We were setting up for stable communion service in my hometown. And I had to run a 20-minute errand. And I said to the older one, do you want to stay here or do you want to go with me? I'm running off 20 minutes. I'll be back. My oldest one said, I'll stay here. I said to the younger one, do you want to stay or do you want to go? She said, I want to stay. I said, that's fine. I'll be back in 20 minutes. I get in my van. This is right before Christmas. I back out of my driveway or out of my garage. And here comes my 7-year-old. No shoes, no jacket. I open the window. She's like, I'm like, what's going on? She said, I want to go, I want to go. I said, okay, that's no problem. Go in the house, put your coat on, put your shoes on. They go in the house. She doesn't come out, she doesn't come out. She doesn't come out. You know the story, you've been down this way. I go in the house, there she is. I'm like, what's wrong? She said, I don't want to go. I said, that's fine. Stay in the house. You know where this is going. Stay in the house. You know, I'll be back, you know. Your sister will be here. She has my cell phone. I get out, get in my van, all the way to the end of the driveway, second time. I'm like, let me guess, you want to go? Yeah, I want to go, I want to go. I said, that's fine. Go in the house. Get your jacket on, get your shoes on, let's go. This time I followed her in there because I know enough that the second time is not going to be any better. She gets half of her clothing on. She goes, I said, let me guess, you don't want to go. She said, no, I don't want to go. I said, you don't have a choice anymore. Okay? I'm a parent. You're a child. You've had these discussions, you know. I don't trust you here with Jillian because I'm afraid next time I'm going, you're going to be down the road running after the van. And Jillian won't know what to do, and you're going to have to come with me now. Boom! She goes completely out of control. Okay? Relatively weak. Unable to interpret her surroundings. You know, incapable of managing her world at the moment. She's unaware of the resources we can use. I'm like shoving her shoes on, you know, and I'm dragging her. She's kicking and screaming to the van. I hooked her arms like this. On the outside of the van and her legs underneath like this. I am 41 years old. I'm a professional in conflict resolution. I'm pushing my daughter against her backbone into the van. I'm starting to kind of have conflict. Okay. I was doing okay till the van thing started. Okay. I shut the van door. Well, first I tried to get her in her car seat, and she's just like, you know, Houdini, you know, this getting out of it. I snap her in. Shut the van door. I get like a block down. She has unbuckled. She has the van door open, and she's gonna jump out.
Oh no!
Now I am way out. I mean, I'm not. You can see those. Relatively weak. Not in control of our lives. And I'm just freaking out. And so I start laying out consequences. You know, I don't. You know, I'm beyond the hitting thing. We never did that in our family. Don't do it now. But I mean, I was up to the point where, and you're not going to the prom when you're 18. And through everything else, you know, no TV for a week, no friends over, all of those things. And we get into downtown Crookston, 8,000 people, everybody knows me. She opens the van door again, and she's going to jump out. I just was freaking out. I mean, and I knew I was having a fundamental experience. I knew it, okay? And I said to my daughter, Michaela, I cannot even talk to you. I am so upset right now. I can't even talk to you. And my voice was starting to quiver, you know, that feeling? You know, because I was scared, because I love my daughter. And I said, I just can't allow you to do that. And I'm not even going to speak to you until you are quiet and we can talk about this rationally, okay? So I began to sort of back off. The next session, we're going to talk about how do you back off and all those things, but I was starting to back off. And I got quiet, and she kept yelling at me, and all of a sudden she said, hey! And I was real quiet, you know, I didn't say a word. And I drove along, and she said, hey! Deaf people! Hey, deaf people! You know, it's like she has this fishing rod out there and she's like casting for me. Okay, if I'm having an upset day, you're gonna have an upset day. And we do it in conflict all the time. Our coworkers do it to us. You know, they do those little things that that perturb us, or they may drag us into a fight. You've all worked with those employees that are kind of a little more conflictual than other people. You know, that's what it is. They're out there and they're fishing for you, and they're going to see if you can pick up the bait. In conflict resolution, you don't have to pick up the bait. I think that's probably the best thing I've ever learned in my life. Go ahead.
I have a gesture on our table.
Yeah? What's that?
This. You've got the hook and you baited it and you're dangling it in front of me, and until I realize, that's what's going on, then I can defuse it and go,
Yeah. And we'll talk about diffusing tools. That's a great tool to use if you're for a happy marriage. It's one of the better tools we can use. Maybe not that signal. Maybe it's one of those signals. I mean, there are certain ways that we can diffuse situations. And we're going to talk about the seven principles of making marriage work, which John Gottman talks about. And he talks about that he can tell within 90 percentile whether or not, 91%, whether or not a marriage will last. 91%. And he looks at exactly those things. Our ability to recognize it and diffuse it with these nice, soft kind of verbal things or nonverbal things that sort of release us out of those conflicts. We're going to talk about that. We have about 10 minutes. Go ahead.
I just had a quick question about the universal experience. This does that also apply to people who are struggling with mental illness, personality disorder stuff? I'm not talking about people who are hospitalized, but people who are kind of living among us that
borderline personality disorder.
That type of thing.
Yes. Our sense, and from the work we do at the center, yes, and we work with all sorts of people. In the next sessions, we'll talk about some of the responses. This is just the first piece, the first installment. I'd like you all to come back, and the next time we're going to talk about, the answer is yes, to a different degree. This theory, this whole idea of a fundamental experience, focuses on the fact that you can't make anybody do anything. And that's one of the things we're going to have to let go of when we get into conflict and conflict resolution, is that ultimately people have a choice. Gottman says about 90% of all marital disputes are unsolvable. They're unsolvable. It's a matter of how do you manage those disputes. I mean, I was a lousy cleaner when I lived by myself, and now that I live with my wife, I'm still a lousy cleaner, okay? And that really isn't going to change, and that's a rub for us in our family. Now, I've learned to kind of respond to it. It's like, she cleans up the bathroom, I say, I didn't notice it. She's like, no, you never do, and I'm like, you're right. And it didn't bother me, and it wouldn't have made any difference to me whether or not you cleaned it up or not. So we kind of have those little ongoing, all relationships do. That's what makes them healthy. We'll talk about some of those signs. But yes, it does work with borderline and paranoid schizophrenics. And we'll talk about why that does work.
Just hearing your story about your daughter in the van.
Yeah.
It sounds to me like you had two conflicts going on. One at your daughter, which was pretty obvious. Mm-hmm. But the other one was when you were leaving the house. You had conflicting responsibilities.
Absolutely.
That one was a responsibility to get this errand done, and the other was a responsibility to take care of your daughters and be a good parent.
Absolutely. And most of the time, conflicts aren't just about one thing. Conflicts are generally about, how am I going to manage multiple priorities in my life? How am I going to keep all the balls in the air? And you're exactly... What's that?
Isn't that what parenting is?
That's what parenting is. And really, in many ways, that's what life is. That's what life is. And, one of the reasons why this stuff is so interesting is because they say, people talk about change, and how nobody likes to deal with change. Well, anytime you get change, you're going to have some of these words come about. And the people who did the change become this. And we're going to talk about how that all works together, because I want to introduce just three more concepts for you. One of them is critical conflict replay. How many times do you replay an event when it happens? A conflict event in your mind. How many times? Anybody want to guess at it? What do you think?
Hundreds.
Hundreds?
Yeah.
hundreds.
It depends upon how much booby pants they were.
Yeah, if it's more intense, it's much more, but then it's different angles. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a great point, is that different angles. And we, as human beings, replay those conflicts until they make sense in our brains. And oftentimes we do research on conflict and we actually have to make people go back and sort of turn the story back to what the original story was, because ultimately we tell it to ourselves until it makes sense to ourselves. I'm not saying we lie to ourselves, but I think we change the way we deal with the conflict. And you know what? It's a part of the universal experience. There isn't anybody in this room that doesn't do it. It's a natural human experience. Why haven't you ever heard of that? I mean, that's what's kind of weird. Why haven't we ever heard about that? Here's another one, bolstering. When you do something and you do it, and here's an example. Every once in a while, I'll pull a bonehead move on the road, you know, or I'll pull into the wrong lane without looking there, and I'll almost hit a car, and they're like, and they flip me off, or they get mad at me, and the whole rest of the day, I go around telling people what happened. I go around and tell them what happens. And I go around and tell them what happens, not because I want Bill, or what's your name?
Marianne,
or any of you to say, he's a bad person. You're a really bad person for doing that. We go around and tell other people that so that they say, you are a good person. You are a good person. And it is part of what we work with in conflict resolution called victim-oppressor stuff. You know, that in many ways, no matter how we negotiate, we don't want to be the victim and we don't want to be the oppressor. I worked with at-risk kids in schools, and I dealt with gangs, groups. I mean, we're talking some of the nastiest. If you can think about the wildest kids, that's the ones I worked with. And the minute one of them would roll over and give it all up, you know, expose their belly like a dog does, the other kid would immediately get mad because they don't want to be the victim. They don't want to be the oppressor.
No, I was just thinking about that brings up conflicts that seem to take place where one person has a power imbalance over you, and there's no hope of resolution.
Yep.
And as opposed to, say, in a marital relationship, and you're going to make a distinction between those two because your boss dumps on you, and you know, what are you going to do?
Well, I think there's a difference between understanding conflict and understanding power within the relationship. Okay. That power dump, if it's a dump on you, is not it's not the same as the power that person has in organizationally. One of the things we used to do is that we do a lot of employee-employer conflicts, and we used to think about balancing the table. In other words, giving the employee a lot more power by asking them the questions, by asking them to go first. Well, we don't do that anymore because we know that in the reality, if it's a real conflict, neither one feels strong. And that's one of the things we have to change. We have to change that paradigm that says, I am completely the victim, or am I completely the oppressor? And I have never found a situation where one person says my way or the highway. When it comes right down to conflict, and I get into some really weird conflicts, I mean, high-ranking government officials, and ultimately, everybody has this. Nobody wants to be the victim, but nobody wants to be the oppressor. And so when it comes right down to it, neither one of those stances will take place. I'm not sure if that answers your question, Scott.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think that what we've done is we've separated the power that is in the hierarchy from the powerlessness that both people experience in the conflict. Okay. So we'll talk more about this. We'll talk more about empowerment and recognition as we go along through the week. I'm up. It's been 60 minutes. Seems pretty quick, doesn't it?
You should do it three.
I know. You'll have to come back tomorrow to get the next one. I will be here. Have a nice night. Thanks.